Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. So excited to be here. Thank you for tuning in. I know you have many options, but you're spending a little bit of your valuable time with me, and I appreciate it. That's why we're the top-ranked CJ Evolution podcast. If you love the show, love the content, head over to Apple Podcasts, give us that rating and review, that five-star rating. We sure would appreciate it. And follow us on Facebook at Criminal Justice Evolution. So excited to have my next guest on the show, Michael Waddington. Michael is a criminal defense lawyer defending military personnel everywhere around the world, and he's the best-selling author of Battle Mind, Kick-Ass Closings, and The Art of Trial Warfare. A really interesting show. But first, a word from the people that help keep the lights on. Folks, if you love coffee, you know what I'm going to tell you. You are going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. Everything from coffee to cocos to elixirs, they have it all, and you're going to love it all. My personal favorite, the Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. Yes, you heard me right. Mushrooms. The good mushrooms, not the bad mushrooms. Gives me that energy, that clarity, that zip that gets me through my day. Head over to cjevolution.com, and you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. Now, best of all, you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. I got to tell you, folks, I'm not BSing you. This is the best coffee I've ever had. You are not going to be disappointed. We are so honored to be partnered with a company like Detecticam. If you've never heard of Detecticam, you need to educate yourself, because this company is keeping our brave men and women safer, the ones that protect us every day by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of your hand, detecting explosives, illicit drugs, now COVID-19. This app-based technology is amazing. I wish I had it when I was on the street, but you can have it now for your agency. Head over to cjevolution.com, check out the link to Detecticam, and see how they can help keep your troops safer.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything.
800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. That's 800-210-7907.
Are you tired of high cable TV rates? Sign up for Dish today and get a $500 bonus offer while supplies last. Plus, lock in your price for 2 years guaranteed. Call All American Dish, your Dish authorized retailer, now.
800-471-0253. 800-471-0253. That's 800-471-0253. Offers require credit qualification, 24-month commitment, early termination fee, and e-auto pay. Restrictions apply. Call for details.
You're going to love the show with Michael Waddington. He's a former JAG officer serving with the United States Army. His cases have been covered by the Rolling Stone, CNN, New York Times, 60 Minutes, Time, NPR, Nightline, The New Yorker, and many others. Jeez. In 2014, he was featured in Forbes magazine as one of America's premier expert game changers. Enjoy the show with the one and only Michael Waddington. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am so excited and so honored to have my next guest on the show, Michael Waddington. He's an American criminal defense lawyer that defends serious cases worldwide. He's also a best-selling author, and we're going to talk about that during this show. Michael, you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Glad to be here.
We had a long conversation before we started, and we finally started. So, again, thank you for being here. And I forgot to mention, for all the listeners out there, Mr. Waddington served as a Army JAG officer, and thank you for your service, sir. And I always ask, you know, vets and military members, what made you join the military? What made you join the Army?
Oh, I enlisted in the Army in 1993 when I was 18. So the modern generation won't get this, but you know, when we were kids, my brothers and I, we watched Rambo, Chuck Norris, you know, the Rocky where he was fighting Drago and all that. Yeah, those Top Gun, every movie we saw was like Cold War. Looking back, it was Cold War propaganda. But we loved it, and we grew up wanting to, you know, fight against communism and all that. And so that's why I joined. I didn't join for the GI Bill. I didn't join, you know, for any monetary benefits.
Just wanted to be Rambo, Michael.
Well, I wanted to be Rambo. We wanted to be Rambo. What we didn't realize at the time that Rambo had serious PTSD due to what he saw in Vietnam. And, you know, like First Blood, he's running around shooting up the local police and the National Guard. Yeah, he's like, he was committing terrorism looking back. But the show was cool. And Rambo, you know, he didn't really, what we didn't get is the fact that he, especially in part two, what his main mission was is he wanted to come back and get the bureaucrat. Remember that CIA bureaucrat guy?
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
There, and then he stuck the knife into the desk next to his head. Yeah. But that's why we joined. We didn't join, and people may think this is silly, but yeah, we didn't join for benefits or anything like that. We just joined because we wanted to serve. And then all three of us did ROTC. So both of my brothers are colonels. One just retired. The other one's on active duty. And I left the JAG Corps in 2006 and went into private practice.
Now you went to college, you went to law school before you joined the military, correct?
No, well, I enlisted and then I went to college and then I got commissioned through ROTC in the Army as a lieutenant, and then I went to law school, and then I came back as a JAG.
So. And I think I mentioned before we started, Michael, my dad was a JAG officer, and he loved, you know, that life in the military. And then he went on, you know, to the Air Force, but he loved being a JAG officer. You know, the stories he would tell me, you know, are just crazy.
it's a great job. We see, as a JAG, you get to see all the crazy, gritty things that are going on behind the scenes in the Army. Like if you're in the Army and you're going to work every day, you won't even get to see a sliver of what really happens, you know, behind closed doors in the barracks, or what drill sergeants are doing, or what general's doing this to this person. But the JAGs have their hands in all that. So if anyone out there is a law student or is a lawyer, you know, I would at least consider, I think you can be up to your mid 30s to join the JAG Corps. Even reserve JAG Corps duties are very fun. You can volunteer to come on active duty, but for me, it was a lot of fun. And I do that now. I mean, that's what I'm a civilian, but I travel around and I deal with JAGs every day. A lot of great people in the JAG Corps.
And I imagine the military, you know, needs good lawyers like you, because, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like a lot of people are joining the military these days. Maybe it's just me. I know your son's in the military. Thank you for his service. I told you my son was in there. But are from your perspective, Mike, are a lot of people joining the military today, or is it?
I think, well, no. I mean, there are people joining. Our military is fairly small compared to what it used to be, you know, during the Cold War, Vietnam, and then World War II. But it's, what's interesting to me is how few people actually know anything about the military. Some guy said this is an acquaintance of mine. We were talking about my son he's supposed to be deploying here in January, and he's pretty pumped up about it. His unit's getting ready to go. And this guy says to me, and this is an educated man, he goes, why would your son ever join the military? And I'm like, I didn't understand what he was saying. Like in our family, that being in the military is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, I mean, he's a smart kid. He's got a lot of potential. I don't understand why would he have to join. I'm like, he didn't have to join. He joined when he was 17 because he wanted to join. And I mean, he's not going to probably be in for 20 years, but there's something to be said about wanting to just to serve your country and do something productive. I mean, my son went off when he was in after high school, instead of sitting around like a lot of these people smoking marijuana, drinking, going to the pool parties. He was in basic training and then AIT. But anyway, I tried to explain to this guy that a lot of people that, It was a debate that I shouldn't even really been having to have. I was trying to explain to him that to get into the military, this is not like you see in the movies where you go to war, go to jail. You can't get into the military unless you have a very clean record, you have certain test scores, you're physically fit. And I think that's something that's impacting the recruiting rates. I know it is, because I've read articles on this. It's hard to get people that don't use drugs, that don't have some sort of a criminal record, that have certain grades, that can pass the test and meet the physical qualifications, and that want to go. So, because the standards are a lot tougher now than they were probably, you know, from what I hear in the 1970s and 80s, Like even if you smoke marijuana, you have to explain it. They document it. And so, yeah, people were joining. It's just a lot less.
You know, some of the people I know that, why would your son join the military? Couldn't he do anything better? Oh, so joining the military is not good.
it's incredible to me because the people that I work with on a daily basis, I mean, I'm working with people like young men and women that are in their 20s. Can you hear me fine there?
Yeah.
Okay. But young men and women that are clean cut, you know, they're brave, they're courageous, they're super smart, good looking, physically fit. Like these are like all American people that are out volunteering to go to places they don't have to go. And the pay is not bad, but they could be doing other things with their skills, but they're doing it because they think they're doing something that's good for the country. But I think the average American doesn't know any of these types of people. They think it's like they're thinking back to Full Metal Jacket or something like that. And they think that's the military. It's not at all. And by the way, if someone says something like that to me now, I mean, I kind of look at them. I don't even, it's not worth me discussing, why would you do this? Why would you join? Why would you serve? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're sitting in America, sipping a $5 Starbucks latte on your phone. Like, I mean, give me a break, man. But my response is, who's going to defend our country? You and your son, who's probably stoned right now. I mean, seriously. So.
Yeah. It just amazes me that and maybe those people have always been there. I mean, I'm sure they were, but it just seems like people like that are much more vocal these days when, thank God for the, kids like yours that are joining the military and my kids that are just keeping it going. And I know there's millions of other kids that join, but I didn't force my kid to join the military. I just not that he would listen anyway, but I gave him my 2 cents and it was his decision. And I'm glad he did it and I'm glad he's serving. And I don't know if he'll be a career Air Force person, but I guess we'll wait and see.
Well, it's a great place. You know, so my son, like I said, he joined me when he was 17. And mm-hmm. so, you know, he's getting ready for this deployment. He told me that he's 20 right now. So he's been in for about 3.5 years. He came in pretty young. He's going to be getting promoted to sergeant. So E5. For once they deploy, that's what he's been told. And I'm thinking that this is a great thing. Like I'm looking at him and looking at some of his friends, and his friends are good kids, you know, and just people in his peer group, especially during this COVID, a lot of people have gone off the rails. A lot of young men and women, for the past 6 months, they've been just kind of sitting around, don't have a purpose, depressed. You know, a lot of them, I know a lot of kids nowadays, I think it's more than when I was young, are just using recreational drugs. That's how they pass the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to have young men like our sons that are on the right track, that are doing something productive, that are part of a large organization that has a good overall purpose. And it's, there's no comparison to where they're going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the road.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, as a young enlisted person, you have to do crappy details and you don't have a lot of, you know, they micromanage you, but that's a good thing. You know, that you're supposed to be micromanaged when you're a private or a young specialist. And that's what the sergeants are for and the officers are for. So, yeah.
And I love it. Good because, like you said, I mean, speaking from, about my son, I mean, or any young person, I mean, they're learning the skills, they're learning the discipline. And like you mentioned with maybe some of your son's friends, the same with my son's friends is they're good kids, but they have no direction. Mm-hmm. And he's light years ahead of his friends. And I'm not saying that. And I mean, everybody makes choices, but you know, the choice he made to go in is going to pay off down the road, with his decision. And, you know, I always tell my son, you're a hell of a lot smarter than I was at your age. I mean, you're doing it all. You're doing it all right. I mean, he's already, okay, I want to do this, and this. So like I said, thank God for young people like that. Now you pivot a little bit, Michael. I mean, you defend primarily, we were talking a lot off the air, but for the listener, defend about, is about 95% like military personnel, right?
Right. So when you say criminal defense lawyer, most people think, oh, that's the guy who's downtown defending drug dealers.
No. Yeah.
I don't do that. So what I do, just like in the movie, A Few Good Men, you know, Tom Cruise mm-hmm. defending those Marines, let's say those Marines didn't want Tom Cruise. They're allowed in the military, if you're being charged with a crime, you can hire someone who, a lawyer who can come in and defend you along with your military lawyer. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I would have been hired to come in and be the lead counsel, and Tom Cruise would have been like my second chair, my assistant. And so I, what I do is we get my wife and I are in practice together. We've been doing this now for 20 years. Part of that time was when I was in the JAG Corps. But if you get a phone call, hey, my son's in trouble. He's in Japan. You're a colonel. I just did a case with a colonel at Fort Bragg, a special forces colonel accused of some crimes. And they call me, they retain me. And then I work with the military lawyer and I come in and I represent you in a military court. So like my last jury trial, I had a general, I never had this before, the president of the jury, because the jury consists of all military members. And everyone on the jury, on your jury in that case, has to outrank the accused. So if my colonel is a full bird, if my client is a full bird colonel, everyone on the jury has to be a colonel that has more time in service, who's been around longer as a colonel than my client. And so that means that I had a bunch of very, very experienced colonels and a general on the jury, which is pretty cool, because those guys are no nonsense. You know, colonels and generals, they like get to the facts. They don't want emotions. And it's kind of intimidating, but it was a lot of fun. Because some of these guys had so many medals. We had special forces colonels and a special forces general on the jury. He had like a foot long span of ribbons. And I'm not talking just like ribbons you get for breathing, like multiple bronze stars with valor. Like, all, it was pretty cool. Like, so Colonel Troutman from, you know, Rambo, remember Colonel Troutman? Imagine him being one of your jurors.
We'll be right back with Michael Waddington.
Are you tired of high cable TV rates? Sign up for Dish today and get a $500 bonus offer while supplies last. Plus, lock in your price for 2 years guaranteed. Call All American Dish, your Dish authorized retailer now.
800-471-0253. 800-471-0253. That's 800-471-0253.
Offers require credit qualification, 24-month commitment, early termination fee, and e-auto pay. Restrictions apply. Call for details.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything.
800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. That's 800-210-7907.
Now, for those listeners out there, I mean, I'm sure that we can go days about the differences between, you know, regular, you know, civilian law and UCMJ, but what are some of the big, like, as far as like to get a conviction under UCMJ, I mean, how does it work? I know, is it the same with like as civilian? So it's, you know, you have to have everybody agree, obviously, in a civilian court. I mean, how does it work in a military court?
Okay, so in a military court, that is a big difference. So in a civilian court for a federal felony crime, you would need 12 out of 12. And that's the same in most states. So you need 12 jurors to vote guilty or not guilty. In the military, it's all about efficiency. So, you know, to get 12 people or however many people to agree to something, especially given the rank differences. So you could have a jury that has a sergeant, a major, a colonel, and, you know, technically you could have an E4 or a specialist, all on the same jury. And so in the military, what they do right now under the new system, there's a new system that just came out about a year ago. You have eight people on the jury. They're all military members and they need 6 out of 8. And uh-huh. You may be thinking, whoa, that, because the initial reaction is, well, 6 out of 8, that's even easier to get a conviction. It's not. And here's the reason why. They do secret written ballots. So let's say you have 8 people on the jury and you have all these different ranks and no one's allowed to pull rank on the other one. And in order to ensure that, they do a secret written ballot. And so you just write G for guilty or not guilty on your little piece of paper, you put it into the hat, and then the lowest ranking member counts guilty, not guilty, guilty, not guilty. And if they don't get 6 out of 8, the first go, that's it, it's not guilty. Like, wow. There is no, in order to re-vote and do all that, it's a whole different proceeding. procedure. I've ever actually never had them do a revote. So once the verdict comes out, that's it. So think about it, like in World War II or in Vietnam, when you're trying to do a jury trial, you want it to be quick, efficient. And so, and the same thing goes now, like they do court martials overseas sometimes. You don't want to have a 6 week long jury deliberation, or like in the OJ Simpson case, that thing went on for a year.
Yeah.
We don't have time for that in the military. So it's most cases are done within usually 4 to 5 days. So it could be a murder case. We'll start on a Monday, we'll be done on a Friday. In almost every single case, I've only had a few in my entire career that have gone longer than 5 days.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does the like things like appeals go in under UCMJ, Michael? Is it the same or different?
No, it's very different. And on the appellate level, they're trying to protect, because it's a unique system. It's the military, and they want to make sure that people in the military are not getting railroaded. They have a pretty robust appeal system. So if you get a certain amount of time in jail, or you get a discharge, so like a dishonorable discharge, you get an automatic appeal, which means it's going to go, you get another lawyer assigned to you, and they look through the whole record, and then the government gets a lawyer. And then there's two levels of military appeal, and then it goes up to the Supreme Court. So right now at the Supreme Court, there are several military cases that are being looked at by the Supreme Court. One of them has to do with the statute of limitations and sexual assault cases. You know, they're going to be deciding, I think next month is the hearing. The Supreme Court's going to decide, should there be a 5-year limitation or no limitation on sexual assault cases? And going to be a big one because, you know, there have been a lot of cases that have come out in the media, you know, with politicians and things of that nature, where they're like saying, hey, 30 years ago, somebody touched me at a bar. And so really the question is it fair, and can you have a fair trial 30 years later when it's two adults involved in this crime, and can the accused even get a fair trial 30 years later? And like, how do you defend yourself in a case 30 years later? So that's really the issue that stems from a military case. Cause at one time there was no statute of limitations in the military.
I guess off the top of my head, just thinking out loud, I mean, I think I like the idea of statute of limitations. Now, I think in the civilian world, coming from a law enforcement perspective, I think when it comes to certain crimes don't have statute of limitations, like crimes against children, it doesn't, you know, there's no statute of limitations on that. But I think, I mean, I don't know if I, and this is, again, this is just my opinion, I don't know if I would like to go back 30 years, you know, because I think it, in some instances, like you said, or alluded to, it'd be very, very hard to prove. I mean, how do you, witnesses and evidence, and, you know, I think a lot of times it's going to be word against word, right?
Yeah, and that's the problem that we run into now is it, well, for example, like in the military, crimes against children, it can go back, murder, and certain capital offenses, there's no statute. But I'm talking about cases where two people had sex in a hotel room 9 years ago, and, you know, things have happened since then, and then out of the blue, the woman, you know, watches the Kavanaugh hearings and then calls the colonel up, the guy who's now a colonel, that's the one I'm talking about on appeal, and says, hey, I've been thinking about what we did all those years ago. You were married. I feel guilty. Tell me what happened. And I was drinking. You were drinking, you know, and then she tries to get the guy to confess, and he starts venting, and she starts venting. And that's all the evidence they have, is them trying to rehash a night of what seemed like consensual sex 9 years ago. And with this idea, you know, in modern cases, there's a burden shift to the accused in the second case. So.
Well, and I guess my question is, and you probably hear this all the time, is okay. And I know people have their reasons, but I mean, this is where I think there should be a statute of limitations. Why, after giving your example, I mean, why, what's the motive behind it now? I mean, you mean you've been stewing this for, I'm not saying that people can't have, you know, trauma and stuff like that. But I mean, I always want to know, okay, well, why now, you know, after 9 years? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, I could see like a year or a couple months or something. Well, but I always question, you know, what's the motive behind this?
Well, that's the interesting thing, because, you know, studies show that, and this is pretty much common sense, like there are some people that will come out that are a victim of a crime. They'll come out a minute later and call the police. Some will come out 6 months. Some will never come out. So the idea of, oh, we're going to reopen cases from 30 years ago and try to litigate them is this idea that everyone has a chance to have their voice heard. But then there's the opposite side. How do you defend yourself against a charge if you're even, particularly if you're innocent, when all the evidence is gone? Like if you were accused me, if you were to say, if you were to go to the police right now and say, Waddington assaulted me in the bathroom, I could put together a defense pretty easily. Like, no, I was at the car dealership 4 hours ago or 2 hours ago with my wife, and I have an alibi and I was logged in from this email. 10 years from now, it's a little easier said than done. And so whenever someone comes in who's crying and is emotional and telling the story, that's where it becomes problematic when you have no other evidence. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean the guy didn't do it or did it. It just, it's very, the reason there's a statute is it's not like, oh, you should have done it earlier. It's just, it's the chances of getting a fair, successful outcome, meaningful outcome, you know, 9, 10 years later is very difficult. And it's a waste of taxpayers' money.
Well, and we were talking a little bit, Michael, about how you defend people that have been accused, you know, and a lot of times from what I'm hearing is they get acquitted, but meanwhile their reputation is ruined, their career is gone, they're divorced now, they're ruined, you know, of something that didn't happen. I'm not saying nothing ever happens. I'm just saying, I mean, again, you defend people like this, and I'm, you know, and a lot of times their life is gone.
Yeah, it's the thing is, once the allegation is launched, and what our system doesn't really take into consideration is the people making the allegation. And we see on TV, there's this idea that all these people, all these cases you hear about in the news, like someone's being attacked outside of the mall, shopping center. That does happen. Like there are violent assaults all over the country. A lot of the cases that I was talking about earlier have to do where there's two adults in a private consenting setting, often in a relationship, and they engage in consensual relations, and then something happens, or the person, the guy maybe dumps. I see this a lot where you have a person who is involved in an extramarital affair. The woman wants to marry the guy. She suffers from some sort of psychiatric situation or illness, for like borderline personality disorder is a big one that has been affiliated with false allegations. And when the guy abandons her, leaves her, which fear of abandonment is one of the main criteria of a borderline. And then the person, it's like all or nothing. It's like, you don't want me, no one's going to have you. And there's an excellent book, if you're interested, and some of your readers might be, it's called, I Hate You, Don't Leave Me. It's called, I Hate You, Don't Leave Me. And it's a book written by psychiatrists who analyze these types of people who go around, and they're both men and women who, and you probably met them, like they immediately, your best friend, they're really close to you. You guys are, they're really cool. You're like, I really groove with this person. And then you maybe look at them the wrong way or don't answer a text message within 5 minutes. And then they're like, what's the matter? You didn't respond to my text. Who are you talking to? Like, I barely know you, man. But those types of people have a tendency to lash out. And a lot of those folks that act like that are borderline personality disorders. But in the book, they talk a lot about this. I just read this book recently for one of my cases. And then you realize that some of these people, it's not about, like, I've seen cases where the person will admit, if I can't have you, then no one else can. And I've seen it with men accusing other men of things, you know, in certain sexual relations, women accusing men, mm-hmm. things of that nature. Even men saying, doing, like, maybe they have an affair with a married woman and then she rejects them. And the next thing you know, they're showing up at the husband's office with photos and just really crazy stuff. Like you see, what's that movie called with
Glenn Michael Close?
Duncan. Yes.
Yeah. A Fatal Attraction.
Yeah. That's my life, man. I deal with these types of cases.
I won't be ignored, Dan.
The colonel and I was just telling you about the woman we had the emails where she was telling this colonel and the other, there was a love triangle, and this is in the news, so you could Google my name and you'll see the articles, where there was a love triangle happening, and the woman, both of the men rejected her after their deployment to Pakistan, and she started basically harassing these people and stalking them, breaking into their houses. It was just like that. And then we have emails that say, you know, you haven't seen the last of me, you're going to see me again, and I'm going to accuse the other guy of sexual assault, and you're going to be my witness, whether you think it happened or not, you can't escape me, things like that.
Yeah,
that happens. Jeez. And it's scary. At least we had the evidence in that case to prove it.
Well, do you think, Michael, with, you know, the advent of, you know, the technology we have now, I mean, do you think it's easier, well, a little easier from a defense perspective, where everything, it seems like there's a digital trail now. I mean, in some way, shape or form, whether it's a text, email, social media post, is it a little bit easier now to defend when you usually have a digital trail somewhere?
You know, yes and no. So I think the accuracy of the convictions has gone up, no doubt, because of cameras, because of technology and DNA and all the forensic sciences. In that regard, I think getting a fair outcome is, and so it's not easier. It could actually be worse for my client, you know.
Yeah,
like
true,
I have cases
yeah.
where I get the evidence in. I got a disc. It's a 64 gigabyte disc. It's a rip on a phone from a case, and I'm starting to look at it. I'm like, oh God, it's.
So I guess it could go either way.
Yeah, it's not looking good. Well, I mean, so justice is more likely to be served if the evidence is collected properly and preserved. And if the law enforcement do everything they can to preserve the evidence. But what we run into a lot now is when it comes, like, you know, people having an affair or these secret relationships, they often, you know, they'll use burner phones and stuff like that. And so often there isn't any evidence except for, you know, one person's word against another. Mm. So, well, so it cuts both ways.
Interesting. What about now, what advice, I mean, we could talk about this all day, but, you know, we were talking about, you know, young people, you know, some of the cases that you see, I mean, it's just like a different, and again, I'm not ripping on the younger generation, but it's like, you know, what we were talking about relationships, you know, before we started, I mean, what advice would you give a young military member out there? It doesn't matter if you're male, female, you know, in a same sex relationship. I mean, what kind of advice, relationship advice would you, cause you see it, you see all this stuff all the time.
Yeah. We've seen many people's lives ruined either because they just made bad decisions on both sides, and both sides' lives can be ruined. And I'm not talking about people, one where they attacked another person.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously I'm talking about people that get in mixed up in these situations where they're like, man, I thought she was consenting. Or so we hear the big things, and some of this might not be popular. And I know it's not popular with the military, one of the biggest things is alcohol. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're drinking alcohol with someone you don't know, who in a situation that's uncomfortable, and you're being pushy and maybe trying to lie to them. So I'm going to tell you a couple of red flags. First of all, treat women with respect before, during, and after, and don't hook up with people that you don't want to have some sort of follow-up relationship with. That's my advice. No one's going to listen to that. Okay. You hook up with a random person you just met who's drunk. You don't know what her baggage is. You lie to her to try to get her to have relations with you, and then you mistreat her afterwards. First of all, that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But it's going to lead. It's much more likely to lead to a situation, to a false allegation, or just maybe confused allegation where the person doesn't really know. You know, they have mixed feelings afterwards, because a lot of people have cognitive dissonance when they go and they do something. Maybe they give in and they fool around and they break all their moral values and they hook up with this guy that they just met at a, you know, and under the stars. This is actually a case I just did a good fellow, by the way. And then the guy treats him like crap and acts like he doesn't know them. And then the girl starts talking. These are young people a lot of times. And this guy, I really liked him. He did this and that. And you have the negative friend who jumps in and starts, well, he didn't want you. He's hooking up with Melinda over there. And next thing you know, there's these feelings. Well, maybe I didn't want this. Maybe he convinced me. Maybe he seduced me. And so I think you're just better off, you know, showing some discipline. Don't hook up with people you work with. That's another big one. You hook up with people that work for you. You're looking for trouble. Or people that are in your unit. Like, I don't think people should be having, it's fraternization. All these things are crimes, by the way, in the military. Not that people don't do it. You know, like fraternizing and hooking up with people of different ranks and within your unit is wrong, because it causes problems at work, you know? And because if you're on the flight line with someone, or you're in a foxhole with someone, and now that females are in all of the different areas of the military, this becomes a bigger problem, because you're going to have a bigger issue, because you're going to have them in foxholes. And I'm not saying it's a problem because they're there, but it's a problem when the guys are there and the guys don't lay out the boundaries, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You still hear me? So if you're a sergeant in the unit, you have a female in your unit, she's a female soldier in your unit. She's to be treated like everybody else. It's not like a free for all to see who can hit on her, because she's in your unit. She's one of your teammates. And so that's the problem we run into, is where we have these, a lot of times we have these guys met trying to hit on every woman they could find. Like, it's a lack of discipline.
Yeah.
And it's also disrespectful too. And again, some of your listeners might be like, this guy's crazy. He's not living in the modern world. Like I told you earlier, like what I try to tell my son, hopefully he follows it. Like, you shouldn't be trying to do things with some lady that you would not want some guy doing towards your sister. So if you follow that rule, you're going to probably end up in decent relationships with people. There's not going to be any allegations thrown out there, and you're not going to be in these somewhat coercive relationships where, you know, there's alcohol involved or there's rank involved. I mean, then it starts getting dicey, because if there's alcohol involved or rank involved, you're much more likely to get accused and also convicted.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. It's not worth it.
No. And that's what I told my son, is like, you know, I mean, he's a kid. I mean, he's going to make mistakes. I get it. But I mean, do you really want to, throw everything away over, you know, having too many beers and making stupid decisions? And I agree with you. I mean, as simplistic as it is, it goes back to treat others like the way you would want to be treated. And I think it's more problematic. And, you know, Michael, with, you know, apps like Bumble and all this other stuff that's out there, these hookup applications, where it's much easier now for not just young people, but older people alike to just get in these situations. And I saw it all the time in law enforcement where, you know, something happened. There's no doubt it happened. There was intercourse or whatever, but now it boils down to, you know, he said, she said, because it's, you know, lack of evidence or whatever. And it's just not worth it.
You gotta look at the red flags. I agree. It's so, because you might do something 10 times and nothing happens. That does not mean it's a good idea, just because you got away with it. Mm-hmm. But then that one time where you do get accused of something, or you have somebody, let's say you have a consensual relationship with a woman that every red flag says, stay away. But because men tend to be stupid, I think. I know. Yep. They do. I say this all the time. Men are such idiots. Like, they fall for the same trick every time.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up with this woman who they're going to save, who, you know, their husband is this or that. And next thing you know, they're back with the husband, and the husband's coming at you at work, or could try to hurt you or something. And then the guy's running scared. His career's done. And for what? For what? Like, what did he get out of it?
Yeah.
Nothing. And so, yeah, you should, you know, just, if you treat others as you would want to be treated, and just avoid the red flags. And don't even give me, you mentioned Tinder, and or you didn't say Tinder, but you said Bumble.
Yeah.
I've had so many cases come off Tinder, Bumble, and Plenty of Fish. And there's a few other ones. Whisper is another one. That's if you want to get entrapped, go on to Whisper. If you're on Whisper, you should delete it from your phone and block it.
I've never heard of it.
Probably Whisper is, yeah, if you go on Whisper, you can just assume that you're talking with people that aren't who they say they are, and they're either going to extort money out of you, you're being set up for something.
Why would you go on an app named Whisper? I mean, the name implies
it's supposed to be secretive.
it just reeks trouble, you know? You know what I mean?
Here's another tip for you. This is just from my years of experience and wisdom. And I said this to a family member that was talking about Tinder the other day. I'm like, if something's too good to be true, then it probably is. And because this person was showing me photographs of these women that, you know, that are on Tinder in Miami, you can imagine. And these are like, and I'm like, something's wrong with this, man. Because the fact that this woman is out there fishing for dates, like this one example, a gorgeous, perfect, physically perfect 26-year-old who owns her own company, drives a Mercedes, has all these things going
for her. So why is she on the...
Yeah. It's either a prostitute...
Catfish. Or
like, come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, you make a really good point. If it's, you know, why would any successful, you know, accomplished person, good-looking, you know, educated... And I'm not saying people don't go on these, but I mean, I agree with you 150%. Look, if it sounds too good, I mean, it's like I said, Catfish, and there's that television show out there. You know, you've probably seen it, you know, where these people are posing as people that, you know, aren't who they are. You know, I mean, come on.
People fall for it all the time, though. And so I was looking at this photo, and then there's this other person that this individual was talking about. He's like, oh, look at her. And here's the story. I'm looking at it. It's this gorgeous Asian woman who says she's from Hong Kong, 26 years old, a whole bunch of like scantily clad photos. I'm like, this is a model or something. This is a fake person. And he's like, no, she's really nice. And she owns a cosmetic corporation in, you know, somewhere in Florida, but she doesn't speak English. There's this whole story, and she's worth millions because she does invest. She teaches people how to invest. I'm like, dude, this is the dumbest story I've ever heard. And I looked her up. I did a back road lookup. It was like a famous actress.
Well, it's not that hard with the internet. You know, Mike, you can drop photos into Google Photos and see sometimes who the real person is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you can do some background.
Google
stuff.
Has an app like that. I have one on my phone. You just drop the image and they're like, oh, that's Billy Smith. That's Tia, you know, Mineta. She's a famous Mexican soap opera actress. Like, dumbass.
Yeah. Now tell us about really quick. You got a lot of books out there. We're talking a little bit before we started. You got a best-selling book out there calling The Art of Trial Warfare, winning at trial using Sun Tzu's Art of War. But you got other books out there. At what point did you say, you know, I want to be an author. I want to, you know, write books.
Oh, geez. Well, I do have a fictional book out there called Battle Mind. It's about a lawyer who defends a JAG lawyer who defends a sergeant accused of war crimes. It's kind of like, it's a legal thriller. I put that out on Father's Day this year. Yeah. I've been wanting to write that, and I want to write television screenplays and television shows. That's one of my dreams. Like, if I had a bucket list, I'd like to do that. And so, but I also like to write. So I do the fictional stuff on the side, but that's the only fictional book I've done. But I also do a lot of books for that teach lawyers, because I've been lucky in the military, doing the military thing for 20 years. We don't have sentencing guidelines. And what that means is we don't plead very many people. We don't do guilty pleas. You know, like in civilian court, they'll charge you with 20 things. They plead it out to one thing and your guy gets probation. In the military, that's not how it works. So I might do on an average year, anywhere from 18 to 24 jury trials in front of a military jury. So I've done hundreds and hundreds of cases, which compared to a lot of my civilian friends and counterparts, it's like 10 times more than a lot of them have done. So when I realized that about 7 years ago, and a lot of these techniques that I keep seeing, these patterns I keep seeing, I decided to start writing books and teaching. And I mean, I don't really make money off the books, honestly.
But you're giving back, you're educating people, you have the experience.
And it makes me a better lawyer. So like The Art of Trial Warfare was the first legal book I did. And it's based on Sun Tzu's The Art of War. And then I've written several books on cross-examination. And I teach about cross-examination, cross-examining doctors, forensics experts, sex assault examiners, police officers. And so, you know, not only do defense lawyers buy my books, but like other experts buy the book too, because I teach them patterns and how to take scientific literature and break it down to effectively cross-examine a doctor or a cop. You know, a lot of cops don't follow their own rules. And they run into trouble when they don't read their own manual properly. They don't follow their own rules. You know, innocent men can go to jail. Guilty guys can go free. So a lot of my teachings have to deal with how to properly, you know, use law enforcement manuals to question witnesses. And then I also did one called Kick-Ass Closings, and that's a best-selling book on it's like the book for for closing arguments in criminal trials.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
You don't need to buy, if you're listening right now and you're not a lawyer, don't buy that book. I'm serious. It's because I know people who have bought it and they're like, it's for lawyers. I'm like, yeah, it's what it says. It's for lawyers. How to give a closing. It's not a legal thrill or anything. It's unless your kid's in mock trial or something or doing like moot court or whatever they call it in high school. Yeah. That would be helpful for them. And if they're in high school, just contact me and I'll send you one. But the book is for criminal defense lawyers.
And you've done stuff like you were a consultant on the CBS series Good Wife. You were in Forbes in 2014, so you know your shit, Michael. I mean, you're very educated, obviously. You're very experienced. litigators. So where can people, you mentioned Amazon, is there anywhere else that people can get your work?
Yeah, if you just Google my name, you put in Michael Waddington. There are a few other Michael Waddingtons out there, but you'll see my website. It comes up and just a lot of the books and my profile and our videos come up too. And we put out a lot of video content for people that just don't know about, you know, court martials or their maybe moms and dads or sons looking at or daughters looking at trouble or in trouble in the military. So, but if you have a second, I'll tell you real quick about The Good Wife.
Go ahead.
So I get a call years ago and one of the, Ted Humphries, he's one of the CBS producers and writers. He calls and he says, The Good Wife, second season, they want someone to help with a military show. And I'm like, I don't know how that's going to work with a Good Wife because she's like a lawyer in Chicago. And it's not like it's not Fort Bragg, for example. So we came up with this plot and I worked with the team, it's a team of writers. And so the first one's about a guy who's tried in state court and then tried in state court. And then they brought him to military court and it was called Double Jeopardy. And if you want an authentic look at what it's like in the military court, the judge there is based on a real judge. The defense lawyers are based on real people. And so, and anyway, we came back a year later, but then the team, the Good Wife crew brought my family out and we went into their writing room. And here's the point of what I'm going to tell you so we're all sitting around the table, like their whole staff, and we're coming up with ideas. And my kids are little at the time and they draw on the board, like these four lines. They're like, okay, these are the commercial breaks. And they said, really what this is about, we have three commercials, which means we have two commercials, whatever. We have like three segments. So each segment has to end on a high note that pushes them in the ads. And then he goes, what we do here is we sell ads. That's what we do at CBS. We sell ads. That's it. So our shows have to be enticing enough to get you to the next series of ads. And that was kind of mind blowing to me because I was thinking, man, there's so much that goes into this. All the plot twists and all that. Really, it's and if you watch television with ads, it's the same. Like, there's always a climax. Like, you know, what was that show with the zombies? Walking Dead.
Walking Dead, yeah.
You know, it was like a cookie cutter thing. It was exciting for the first 10 minutes, and there's an ad, and then it's boring. And then someone does something stupid, usually Rick. And then, you know, the next, they solve Rick's problem, and then something stupid Rick does again. And then there's the final climax, which leads you to the next episode, so...
Well, that's cool. That's a great experience. I mean, and to be...
It was fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Michael Waddington, I enjoyed speaking with you, sir. Where can people find you? Your website?
Yeah, it's UCMJDefense.com. UCMJDefense.com. And that's my law firm website, but, you know, there's a lot of info on there.
Yeah, a ton of info. I looked at it, and we get a lot of military listeners. So, sir, thank you so much, Michael, for coming on the show. Thank you for your service. United States military, and thank you for the work you're doing, sir.
Thanks. Same to you, man. I feel like I know you were in the 82nd Airborne, so thank you for your service. I was a JAG, you know.
Hey, everybody has their role, man, and thank you for your role, sir.
All right, thank you.
All right, brother. Take care.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.